The Monument, Chapter 15. 7 o'clock, even in late summer, in Bolton is still day, nowhere near night. It doesn't get dark for 2 more hours, and most people in the summer work until it's really dark. Except for downtown people, they close up about 5. Fred usually works into the night, but early that day the truck stopped coming. I was helping Fred. I'd gone around and just about drawn everything there was to draw in Bolton and needed to talk to Mick some more to know what to do next, or how to draw better, so I'd gone to help Fred because I couldn't talk to Mick, and about 5 o'clock the truck stopped. I looked out, and there were no more. Fred came out of the machinery room that drove the augers to take the grain into the storage bins. He was covered with dust, 1/2 inch thick, and he sneezed and shook it off. "There are no more trucks," I said. He nodded. "They're stopping for the day." "They are? I'd never heard of them stopping early for anything, not unless it rained. Then they had to wait for the grain to dry out." "Why?" "To get cleaned up for the meeting." "Are they all coming?" He nodded again. "Everybody I talk to will be there. Come on, let's go home and clean up and eat." We walked home 4 blocks, and you could feel something, almost a hum. People waved and said hello and asked if we were going to the courthouse, and Fred would say, "Wouldn't miss it." And the next person would wave and ask if we were going. Nobody knew quite what to expect, but everybody was going. We showered. I put on clean jeans and a t-shirt with the name of a hard rock place on it, even though Emma wanted me to wear a dress. We left about 6:45 to walk down to the courthouse. Fred had a car, an old Chrysler that he baby-talked to when he drove, but he didn't use it unless we went for a special drive or had to go somewhere out of Bolton to go shopping. It took us about 5 minutes to walk downtown, and it's just as well we didn't try to drive. There were cars parked and jammed the whole way, and crowds of people walking, all clean and neat and dressed in their Sunday clothes. "I didn't know there would be this many people who cared about art in Bolton County," I said. "It isn't just art," Emma said. "This monument thing is more than just art. Not everybody will come, but I'll bet there will be close to 1,000. 1,000 was a lot for that courthouse. They were packed in on the steps, so I had trouble making room for Python by the concrete lions. I kind of had to let Python look at a couple of smart-aleck boys the way he looks at chickens before they made a place for him. The hallways were jammed, and the courtroom, the biggest room in the building, was full. Men and women were trying to get in the doorway. I heard sound, voices, some saying things. It sounded angry, some just rumbling. Fred and Emma were stopped, but I was smaller, and by moving sideways, I worked past the blocked doorway into the courtroom. By standing on one of the benches at the rear, I could see all around the room over the heads of the people. Mick stood in the front, up on the raised platform next to the judge's bench. He was cleaner, had his hair slicked back on the sides, and looked fresh in a pair of gray pants and almost white shirt rolled up at the sleeves. He stood quietly, his elbows on the judge's bench, leaning sideways and watching with a small smile on his face, which still looked like it was made of hamburger. His eyes were still swollen almost shut, and his lips were thicker than normal. The crowd was jammed into every square foot of space, and near as I could see, not one of them was looking at Mick. All around the walls, in 2 rows, one above the other, were drawings. Many of them were in the colored chalk, some I had seen him do, like the one of the small grave and drawings of the elevator, but most of them I had not seen before. Some were in pencil, some in charcoal, some just a few lines to show an idea, a few lines that showed everything, and many of them were in more detail. They were all of Bolton, and for a second I just stared without seeing. There were so many, dozens of them, and he had done them all in just 2 days and 1 night, one after the other. And they were all taped to the walls in the courthouse, and it didn't seem possible that he could have done it. Not in such a short time, but then I remembered that I had seen him do some of them in 3-4 minutes, his arms swooping with the chalk. Then I started to look at the drawings, really look. They were more than just drawings. They were pictures of Bolton, of the inside of Bolton, pictures of everything. "Look," somebody near me said, "look at Mrs. Langdon." They meant the drawing. I saw it to the left of the bench on the wall. It was a chalk drawing in a partly lighted room, almost dim, and she was standing near a window looking back over her shoulder at the person looking at the picture. She was nude. Her hair was down and she was nude, and it was one of those things you had to believe because of the things around it. There was the drawing of Jennings' dog, there was Mrs. Langdon, and the drawing of the old car up on blocks, and there was Mrs. Langdon, and there were sparrows at the elevator, and there was Mrs. Langdon, and even if it weren't true, even if Mick hadn't seen Mrs. Langdon nude, didn't matter. The drawing made it true. And more. More drawings of all the inside of the town. Drawings of the men in Lyle's Week Beer Emporium that made them look coarse and ugly and thick-necked and drunk and red. Drawings of Mrs. Carlson holding a dollar in her hand, and it was her, just exactly her, and she looked greedy and like she could hold on to that dollar forever and ever. And me. There was a drawing of me. I was walking down the street with Python holding on to his shoulder, and the leg was there, the leg I didn't like to think about was there, and I could see it now, see it as the others saw it, and I felt tears coming to my eyes. Not because I was sad or upset, but because I felt like I did when I saw the painting by Degas with the ballet dancers in it, and I wanted to know them, and they were gone. And there was me, and I wanted to know me. So talk to me, and ask me all about the leg and the dog, and I couldn't because it was me. I think in all the time of my life, in the long nights at the orphanage, when we used to sneak into the bathroom and talk at night and bring cans of fruit cocktail and pretend to have picnics in there, in all the times of dreaming for somebody to come along and adopt me, in all the time of my life, I never saw me, just me, and there I was. I started to choke up and saw that some of the others were crying, and some, like Mrs. Langdon, were mad. She was standing in the middle of the room, staring, first at the drawing of her and then at Mick, who was not looking at her, and then back at the drawing, and then to Mick. If she'd had a gun, I think he would have been dead. Mrs. Carlson was the same. Off in a corner, she was looking at the drawing of her, holding a dollar. I thought it looked just as natural as life, but she was so mad she was shaking. While I was looking at her, she worked through the crowd to the wall and tore the drawing down and crumpled it and threw it on the floor. It was as if everybody had been waiting, just for that. People seemed to lean, then sway back. Then others came to the wall and did the same, tore the drawings down and crumpled them and stamped them on the floor. In a moment, most of the drawings were gone. Mine was still there, and the old car and the Jennings dog and the little grave in the bushes and some of the elevator drawings showing the sparrows, but almost none with any people in them. Things, I thought, they'll allow things, but they won't allow people. Through all this, Mick hadn't moved. He stood leaning against the bench, and I hurt for him, thinking what they were doing to his art, but he was still smiling that small smile, and I realized that he knew it was going to happen all the time. He had planned on it happening. When they were done ripping and stamping, there was a moment when it was quiet. Mrs. Langdon, staring at Mick, her chest heaving and her jaw so tight her back teeth must have turned to powder, and just then, just at that second, Mick stood away from the bench and said in a loud voice, "Art." Everybody froze, stared at him. Catherine Ann Porter once said that art is what you find when the ruins are cleared away. I did this so you could see, could feel, could know what this is all about, this monument, this art. "Crap," somebody said. "It's all crap." Mick nodded. "That too, but that's part of it, isn't it? Art is everything. And this monument has to be that. It has to be art. It has to hurt and make you weep and lift you into love at the same time." "Tell everybody," Mrs. Langdon said, her voice sounding like breaking glass, "that you never saw me nude." Mick stared at her, then sighed. "That doesn't matter, does it? That's how you would look if I had seen you without clothing, isn't it? Looking over your shoulder near a window with a light on your hair, and your shoulder turned just so to catch the light, and the skin like cream, pure cream, and that sad look in your eyes because love is gone." A strange thing happened then. Mick was talking, but I was watching Mrs. Langdon, and it all went out of her. All the mad went out of her. She seemed to wilt and sag back down into the people standing around her, and the look changed, the way she was looking at Mick. It wasn't hate any longer, and not even sadness. It was more that she was drawn to him, maybe loved him. Right there in front of everybody, she leaned down and picked up the drawing where she'd thrown it, and smoothed it, and tried to make it flat, all the while looking right at Mick, right into his eyes. I wish I had brought my tablet and pencils, because I would like to have drawn that, drawn the way she looked, and the way Mick's picture was crumpled, and how nobody else in the room seemed to be there for her, just Mick up next to the judge's bench. I wondered how come if it was Mrs. Langdon there, was never talk of a husband, now or gone. But Mick wasn't looking at her. "Art," Mick said louder, "is all there is, and this monument must be part of all of you to be true." He shrugged. "So what is it then? What do you want for your monument?" The room exploded. Some were still mad, although what Mrs. Langdon had done changed things, and some of them had even picked up their drawings. The noise was from ideas. But there were so many trying to talk at once, it was just that noise, and I couldn't tell what anybody was saying. Mick held up his hand. "Just a minute." He went to the side of the room where there was a portable blackboard used to draw things for court. He carried the board to the front and took a piece of chalk from the rail. "Now," he said, "one at a time." "Let's do it with hands," Mrs. Langdon said, moving to the front of the room. "I'll call on you, each one of you, and you can tell Mr. Strum what you want." "Mick," said Mick, "just Mick." Sorry, Mrs. Langdon said, looking at him, and I could swear she was blushing. And I'll call you True, he said. That's how you signed your letter. It's a good name for someone with shoulders like cream. Right there in front of the room it happened. You could see it. The thing between them was right there. Better than football, isn't it? It was a low voice in my ear, and I saw Fred standing there leaning down. He and Emma had moved into the room when I wasn't looking. I'm glad I didn't miss this. All right, Mrs. Langdon said. Who's first? Hands shot up. Mrs. Langdon raised a finger and pointed at somebody in back of me. It was Harley Penderson. He pretty much lived at Lyle's Week Beer Emporium and had a head that looked like it had been screwed down to his shoulders, and was probably one of the men who beat Mick up. It should be a painting, he said, of a soldier charging up a hill to save a blonde woman from avenging hordes. He took a breath, and it should be in glowing paint on black velvet. I looked at Mick, and he was smiling straight at me. It was going to be a long night.